The desire to have a sound shell in the park was recorded as early as 1950. Baden Winchcombe and some of his friends got permission from the park committee to play recorded music from the tea house on Sunday evenings during the summer. The concert started at 8:15 p.m. and ran until 10 p.m, with 24 sides of records being played. The first half of the concerts were described as light classical, and the second half consisted of major works of a more serious nature. The equipment which Winchcombe and his friends supplied amplified the sound, so it could be heard clearly around the lake. Having a sound shell would have made this experience better. Also in 1950, the park committee highlighted a sound shell as a possible project in a list of over 20 possible projects. However, it was at the bottom of the list of priorities, and probably would never have eventuated if left to the park committee. By 1954, the call for a sound shell was getting stronger, and a committee was formed, whose members came from the Community Arts Service, the New Plymouth Ballet Club, the Caledonian Society, the New Plymouth Orchestra, the Choral Society, the Operatic Society, and the Philharmonic Society. A subcommittee recommended that the sound shell should be situated on the path, on the southwest side of Cannon Hill, facing towards the tea house, similar to the sound shell at Napier. Representatives from 9 organizations attended the park committee's August meeting with the proposal. The park committee decided that they would defer any decision until 1955, as they were busy with other projects, mainly the Queen Elizabeth Illuminated Fountain. Following the deferral, the proposal seemingly disappeared. In January of 1957, the newly formed Public Relations Office organized a very successful 3-day water carnival in the park, organized by Eric Handberry, the public relations officer. This was so successful that it encouraged Eric to try and organize another event that was bigger and better. To do this, he realized he needed a bigger venue. He was shown the area at Brooklands and immediately saw its potential, comparing it to the Hollywood Bowl at Los Angeles. In June of 1957, the park committee was approached by the Public Relations Office with a request to hold a festival in February or March of 1958. On the site that would become the Bowl of Brooklands. The park committee gave them the green light. At the time, the grassy slope that audiences now use at concerts was a muddy, uneven paddock, with a few cattle grazing on it. Eric Handberry called the event the Festival of the Pines, because of the imposing stand of pine trees on the boundary between the racecourse and the bowl. The original idea was to use two islands that were in the middle of the Brooklands Lake as stages, but Hanbury soon realized that wasn't going to be practical and decided to build a concrete stage. The stage construction was supervised by master builder Malcolm Lay. It had 2,400 square feet of acting space. The sound shell was designed by Robin Sinclair, which consisted of a 35-foot-tall, parabolic wooden arch, supporting a cantilevered tubular frame, which in turn had 4 separate acoustic baffles suspended from it. Work started in August, and with the lake drained, the first job was the removal of one of the bigger islands, as well as a few smaller islets. These were dug out by hand, and soil wheelbarrowed across the lake bed on wooden planks. Where the stage is now was originally swampy ground that was consolidated. The bridge next to the stage, that was built by Newton King, had to be replaced. This had been vandalized during the war years, and the planks used for firewood. Its replacement was organized by the park committee. The first job in constructing the stage was building a concrete supporting wall. The stage itself overhung the wall, giving the appearance that it was floating over the water. All the concrete was mixed on site and barrowed where required. With a budget of only £485 and no financial assistance available from the park committee or the city council, the development of the Bowl of Brooklands became a huge community effort, with Eric Handberry as the driving force behind it. When the park committee agreed to the Bowl of Brooklands being constructed, they also agreed to give the New Plymouth Public Relations Office exclusive rent-free rights to use the facility for 5 years. At the same time, the park committee made it clear that they would not put any money into the venture. Once the stage was completed, the next job was the installation of the parabolic sound shell support. This was done in two pieces and pinned together at the top. The acoustic baffles were then lifted into place. Health and safety was not a priority back then, and some of the construction methods used would not be allowed today. A sound shed was constructed northwest of the bowl, near one of the plane trees. This gave the sound technician Frank Stead line of sight to the stage. Baden Winchcombe had advised on the equipment needed for the bowl and instructed Frank on its operation. The lighting system was designed by Caleb Wyatt, with the electrical control equipment being housed in an old army hut supplied by the New Plymouth Savings Bank. Bulldozers were brought in to even up the rough ground so seating could be installed. The seating took the form of 12 feet long planks, nailed on top of wooden stakes, driven into the ground using sledgehammers. Although the Festival of the Pines proved successful, there were a few issues. The conveniences were makeshift and lacked privacy, and the changing facilities for the performers were poor and apparently lit by candles. Another issue were croaking frogs, which at times tended to drown out the performers. In May of 1958, the Public Relations Office approached the Park Committee with an ambitious 18-point plan to improve the bowl facilities. This was accepted by the committee. Before the 1959 Festival of the Pines, the wooden parabolic arch and suspended baffles were replaced with a permanent sound shell supported by columns rising from the stage. It was designed by Ted Borrell and constructed by Riddick Brothers and Still Limited. Two wooden 9 feet by 9 feet by 25 feet high towers were erected in the lake, incorporating sound and lighting systems. These were 90 feet apart to avoid affecting spectators' view of the stage. The speaker system was designed by Baden Winchcombe. An access road was created from the racecourse, making better access for spectators from the eastern part of town. The audience seating was ripped up, the area regraded, and new seating for 7,000 spectators was constructed, supported on concrete blocks. To pay for the improvements, the Brooklands Development Fund was created. This was a publicly funded scheme that would give members preferential treatment with parking and ticket allocations. Another notable feature of the bowl was a water curtain which sprang up from water nozzles, positioned along the front edge of the stage. In 1959, permanent changing rooms were built, and a second stage, known as the Woodland Stage, was erected, to the right of the main stage. In 1960, the Bowl of Brooklands Trust was set up, as the running of the bowl had become too difficult for the Public Relations Office. In 1961, the toilet block at the southeastern end of the bowl lake was constructed, which replaced a less permanent structure nearby. In subsequent years, more changes were made. The most significant being in 1996, when the original concrete stage was extended. This was covered by a new roof, designed by architect Terry Boone. Also, Baden Winchcombe sound towers in the lake were removed. These changes were completed in time for the Enzo concert in February 1997. Another major development at this time was gaining the TSB Community Trust as a major sponsor and giving them naming rights for the bowl for 10 years. In 1995, the stand of pine trees that were the basis for the festival name were deemed dangerous. About 100 trees were removed. They were subsequently replaced with new pines to recreate the skyline stand.